Guys of a Certain Age is brought to you by no one. Absolutely no one. Except these dudes walking down memory lane. Now let's head to the studio to see what they misremember next.
It's the podcast that all of a sudden has an opening for a third co-host. It's Guys of a Certain Age, Robbie Koblitz in studio.
Art Shirley.
And Jay Reed
for
today.
Now. Just found out that Jay was a little late because he was guesting on somebody else's podcast and he came in unprepared.
I think I came in as prepared as most of us do.
Oh,
when you're in a hole, keep digging.
Am yeah. I?
but you know,
am I wrong?
But do
no.
But here's the thing: Art and I have a lifetime of geek prepperdom of being prepared for geek
that is
stuff.
True. I'm yeah. usually the one. Last night, Robbie says, "Here's some homework to do for tomorrow." I'm yeah. like, "Oh, welcome to my world."
Yeah.
Well, but then I didn't. I did.
He left that world.
I did study a little
for the
bit
world
last
of what was the podcast you're on?
It's called What No One Tells You with Chris and Sarah. It's a travel podcast.
So we're taking applications for a third podcast host. Mm-hmm. What are the requirements, Art?
Can withstand abuse.
Yeah, boy. Now,
we're not talking to you.
But actually, that's a good one.
This is an A and B conversation.
Good sport.
See my way out of it.
Yeah. And we don't want
to
change.
Able to translate the glazed eye expression to audio somehow.
And we don't want to change any of our merch, mm-hmm. so they've got to have the same hairline.
Could oh, Rusty gosh. Come fill in so at least we could keep the Sorry Mrs. Reed thing
You'd
going?
Have to, you know, he'd probably have to dial him in from North Carolina.
But yeah.
Well, you know. National Park he's visiting.
That's what we should do.
Or could we find somebody that
he's
looks
got
like
more hair,
Jay
though.
So
you
I don't
have
to
get
do,
a new avatar.
Okay, yeah, maybe I could just add hair to the avatar.
Give me a Sharpie. Okay. <That's right. laughs> Give me a Sharpie. So, all right, now that Art and I are over our... Betrayal.
Hey, but yes, on that podcast, I plugged this one.
Oh, great.
Plugged this one, yeah.
Do we have independent verification of that?
You will. Well, by the time this airs, that one probably will have aired. So it'll either be there or it won't.
Okay.
But it'll be in the links in the show notes. You know, some podcasts have show notes.
Some podcasts actually make money.
That's true.
Do they make money?
I'm not sure.
There's
video.
They have an opening.
That was the one thing I was worried about is the, you know, it wasn't just audio.
Your
it
face.
Video.
Your
yeah, face. My face is going to be
Oh, it's a face? One. It's a video?
It's audio
face,
and video.
Face podcast.
Yeah. You know, we could do that here.
Yeah, we sure I mean, could do that. You've got the technology.
I've got a couple of cameras.
Yeah.
I mean,
we've got several laying on the table, but
that's right. That's right. We could set up some cameras and just blur him out.
Yeah, okay.
That's probably a good idea anyway.
Yeah.
We haven't talked, and this is not, we won't do this, but have you seen the new Kodak camera that is doing 8mm, super 8mm film again?
Yeah, I saw
it. And it's like $5,000 or something.
Hey, Jay, I saw that 4 years ago in NAB.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, Jay. Well,
they just announced it like it's due a month ago, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge thing. The same folks that are buying real film cameras now want to do, you know, still cameras are doing this.
And you can send your footage in to get it transferred. Yeah. So,
crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy.
Crazy go nuts kind of thing.
Well, the director of photography for Dune, no, not Dune, Oppenheimer came out, you know, excuse me, the cinematographer. He's not a DP, he's a cinematographer. He just won the Oscar for cinematography for Oppenheimer. He's like, shoot film. It's easier than you think. You know, shoot film. So he must be on the tech from Kodak. Because I think Kodak is the only manufacturer of motion picture film now.
Wow.
I could be wrong. I mean, they were the predominant, but I don't think Fuji.
Seems risky.
I don't think Fuji is manufacturing motion picture film.
Yeah.
And it's all those stocks, you know. I never really understood the idea of different stocks looking different ways.
Yeah. Of course, you know, in digital stuff, you can get filters or LUTs, I guess it would be LUTs that emulate different film stocks.
So if I recall correctly, Dune 2 was shot digitally, then they transferred it to film and then back to get the film grain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
that is something else.
It is something else. Huh. I will say there's something a little bit more organic and pleasing about a traditional 35 millimeter film grain that
you just don't get in digital.
You cannot replicate
even if you do something that tries to simulate it. It's not the same.
And the way the highlights roll off, there's just some things in film that, so.
You know, we were talking. We were talking about the Oscars stuff. We watched The Holdovers the other night, and it starts off with like the crickly, crackly sound of like an old movie, like on film. And it didn't stay that way. But at first, I thought, they put that in.
I need to watch that.
It's good.
It's good.
Did you like it?
Jay? I did, yeah. Highly recommend.
Yeah, Paul Giamatti was great in it. To me, it's like a modern Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, that's kind of had that. It seemed like it had that feel.
Except nobody dies. Right. Well, no one dies, do they? No.
Everybody dies. Cyclops dies.
Cyborg.
Right. You're right. Nobody dies in this one.
I've said it wrong so long, I can't remember what's wrong and what's right.
Well, we got to get to geeks at some point. Maybe we can do abbreviated geeks, because I don't know that I really have one. But have you watched X-Men 97?
No, because I don't have Disney Plus.
You don't have Disney Plus.
And I'm probably about to get it again to watch that. Did you like it?
I have not watched much of it, but, just seeing the recreations.
It feels like the...
Yeah. I mean, like the intro is like shot for shot.
Okay.
You know, obviously it's much, much...
I'm Your Baby Tonight.
If X-Men 97 was a lounge act, you could do it. So, well, let's do Geeks of the Week. Somebody who wants to start?
I'll go first. Mine's very short, so that'd be good. But as we record this, Saturday marks Batman's 85th birthday. And I wasn't going to mention it otherwise because we have so many Batman days. But this marks the actual release of Detective 27 back in 1939. And it's March 30th, which is also Mrs. Reed's birthday and my wife's birthday, which is how I remember Batman's birthday. But yeah, 85.
I was going to say, that's how you remember their birthdays.
85 years of Batman.
Wow. Just wow. Mm-hmm. And this 2 days ago as we record was the 40th anniversary of the Breakfast Club Saturday detention.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Love the Breakfast Club.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Don't You Forget About Me. So
yeah, we need to do a John Hughes episode.
Yeah, we should.
We should. We talked about it enough.
Yeah. Yeah, we have. We have. So, Jay, what do you got for a geek?
There's
a podcast. I'd like to talk
about. And they just hired a new third host. Uh-huh.
I have not seen this yet, sadly, but I'm going to watch it today. A Spider-Verse short is on YouTube. Just like a little, I think, 7-minute deal from the Spider-Verse world is airing on YouTube. That just appeared yesterday and said it would be out today, or maybe I might be a day off. You never know. But
you're usually more than a day off, buddy.
Unfortunately, the clip is kind of looks like something from the movie, so I don't know what it's about.
Exactly. Must be able to take abuse and ignore it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
that rolls off his back.
Four or 5 years of that, I'm getting the hang of it.
There you go. And that's not from us. Sorry, Mrs. Reed, but which one? So did that drop, yesterday?
Yeah. The 2 days ago is when this thing came up on comic book, whatever, on Instagram, and it said it was dropping the next day. So it must have come out yesterday. Trailer of the short film, The Spider Within, a Spider-Verse story, debuting on March 27th. So, yeah.
So yesterday.
It should be out by the time this airs.
Yeah, maybe if I remember and don't forget
to
actually air it. That's the way it goes. So I'll have to look that up. That looks cool.
Yeah, let me mention this too, because you talked about Batman. I saw this the other day. Lego is releasing a Batman the Animated Series Gotham City set. So it's like the city.
Oh, okay.
There may be some minifigs in it too, but it looks like going to be, I know y'all are big on the animated series, and I don't know how big you are on Legos, but it looks really cool.
I never got into Legos.
Well, I was going to say less big on Legos. My kids had them.
Yeah.
And so I just remember stepping on them. But
That's the pain I felt. Yeah. So, Star Trek IV is my geek of the week. It's actually a script is being developed. So this will be the last in the Kelvin timeline.
Okay.
So anyway, that's about all we know. So.
And they've gotten Chris Pine back on board. And all
I believe
stuff.
So. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think
they've got it. Because he really hasn't.
He hasn't changed much at all.
Well, he also hasn't had a hit in a while.
No, you know,
he's kind of like, no, I'm not going to do this. And I was like, hey, what's about that Star Trek
Woman?
I know, but that 84 bombed.
Yeah, but, you know.
Dungeons and Dragons was good.
Yeah, it was. Quite good.
Yeah.
Quite good. So that's starting up. I will say, have either one of you guys started Three Body Problem?
No, I haven't.
I cannot recommend it enough.
I've heard it's really good.
It is phenomenal.
So even not having read the book or whatever still?
Yeah, I'll be glad to explain things to you if you need. And that's a non-pandering, sarcastic, because it's very dense. I'm going to go back and read. They did a ton of changes because the book takes place primarily in China.
Yeah.
And so they moved the location to London. But I'm going to tell you guys, it's great. Now, there are a couple of... there's a particular scene that I knew what was happening and I skipped through that's pretty gory.
Okay.
But just the setup for it and what they did was just absolutely incredible.
Right. That's streaming where? I forgot.
It's on Netflix.
Okay. So it's,
and I may watch that without Becky. I'm not sure if she'd want to watch that or not. But.
You know, it's, there's not much gore at all.
Okay.
That is one
particular. How does it compare to Silo in terms of? Because she loves Silo.
You can't really compare them.
Okay.
I mean,
we may, may watch the first episode, and if she wants to bail out, she can go back to...
I will say this. It is so incredibly original.
Palm Royale.
It is one of the most original pieces of sci-fi I've read.
How many episodes?
I believe it's eight.
It is eight. That's right. Yeah. And they're all out.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's Netflix. They drop Netflix, all at once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just started watching The Bear, so you know, that's the original one you recommended. I've got it. Yeah. We finally pulled the trigger on Hulu. So
what do you think about The Bear so far?
So far, so good. I expected something a little different. Like, it's really intense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's kind of fascinating. See,
thank you, Chef.
Behind the scenes. Yeah.
Thank you, Chef. Thank you and please. Thank you. So the
and that's about the only lines you can quote.
It really is. The lead, I forget his name, the lead of The Bear is in negotiations to play Bruce Springsteen in a biopic.
Oh, that would be good in that.
About Nebraska, yeah. About the making of Nebraska.
Okay.
So,
cool.
All right. We've all done Geeks, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to check. You know, I'm a little upset still by what you've done to me, Jay. So why don't you...
help promote this podcast on another podcast?
Why don't we make time for...
Jay's Regrettable Segment. Yes, it's Jay's Regrettable Segment. Today brought to you by Indeed.com. If you're looking for an employee, perhaps another podcaster, please check Indeed.com. Yes, Indeed.com. The sponsor of today's blank's Regrettable Segment.
Oh, by the way, the book's property of the podcast. It has to stay.
Okay.
In fact, I think we'll keep it after we record.
Your name here, Regrettable Segment.
All right, that was great. Did you just come up with that off the top of your head?
I was going to try. I could never remember the name of the podcast. I was going to make that the sponsor and never can remember. Be careful what you say. What's the name of it again?
What No One Tells You.
What No One Tells You.
About murders in the building.
Is that Jay is on another podcast.
Yeah.
Actually, Jay told us.
Yeah.
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 And this is about what I expected when I told you.
Well, at least you know we're consistent,
you're consistent,
right?
Yes.
What's going to be funny is... when we're done, we'll completely forget about
that's
this.
That's right. We'll go, what are we talking about?
Yeah. Jay, another body. Who would want Jay?
Oh, ooh. Come on now.
Jay's had more guests on other podcasts than we have been a guest
apparently,
on.
Apparently, a lot of people want Jay.
Nope. Well, you said it. You know, I could enter the transfer portal. So. I haven't been chosen, but I've been running some tests.
Because, buddy, you ain't got no NIL. Nobody wants our names, our images.
Definitely not the images.
Or her likenesses. All right, what you got?
Okay, this week's regrettable superhero, maybe not, is named Justin Wright. And you might...
Wasn't he a member of the Backstreet Boys?
That's different one.
NSYNC.
Yeah.
Oh, NSYNC.
Yeah. NSYNC. We are not.
Kitchen sink.
Okay, so Justin Wright, his name is Justin Wright, but his superhero name is Just apostrophe N. Right, though, just and right. So
wow,
yeah, real clever.
So nobody can figure that
nobody
one
can
out.
Figure it out. Right, right. And he comes from a line like, you know, how Batman's parents were killed, Superman's parents gave up their lives to send Superman down. Spider-Man was an orphan. He was an orphan, but like apparently was fostered and was called into a law office and basically said, you are now wealthy. Your parents left you this great fortune, which he didn't even know the parents. So he's got all this money and things. And one of the things he finds is a scarf. And this is weak, but the scarf is like a one-way scarf. You put the scarf around you, you can see out, but nobody else can see in. So okay. He wears this scarf that he can see through. That's his cover. That's his uniform, his mask.
It's just a scarf over his head.
Just a scarf tied behind his head, and he can't, nobody can see who is his eyes, but he can see fine. So not a lot of imagination there.
I don't want to have to draw eye holes in a mask for a way. What can I do to get away with that?
But, it's like Justice is Blind, I think it was his sort of point. Okay. But his only superpower besides the see-through mask is his rock hard fists. So, yep. So he beats people up. He has a brief but effective career. One issue, Doll Man number one in 1941 from George Brenner as Wayne Reed was the creator, whoever that was. So he beats up a couple of mobsters. And what he did after he took care of the criminal, he would put a sticker on the forehead of his target depicting a balanced scale in his name, Just and Right. And the way he let authorities know that he had accomplished this was to sign a note, some evidence tied to it, and tie it to a brick and throw it through the police
chief. pretty funny.
Police chief's window. So it's no wonder he only made it.
Kind of the Ernest T. Bass of crime fighters. Right, that's
right. So,
know what I mean, Vern? Know what I mean, Justin?
I think regrettable gets my vote on this
one. It's going to be regrettable for me. Yeah.
Much regrettable. I mean, it lost the law and order vote, too. So
really. Yeah. Throwing the break is not the best way to communicate.
So. No, it's not. It's not. So, all right, we all agree it's regrettable.
Regrettable, yes. Sorry, Justin Wright.
Three regrets. What do we call it? What do we do? This is not what we do. We just say it regrettable.
Yeah, pretty much. We had something at one point we forgot.
Yeah.
All right, the first half of the podcast with Jay is done. Will he survive the break? Stick around, find out. And we're back, and Jay's still with us. We didn't vote him off the island yet, but judgment may be coming soon. But
it's hard to have alliances here when there's only three of us, and y'all have already aligned.
Yeah, that's right. So that's the way it goes. So, but we're going to talk sci-fi influences. So we talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago with Dune, part two out. And we've kind of alluded to this, but I actually gave out homework last night as I'm leaving the Walmart parking lot. And
I left mine at work.
Yeah. I thought the dog ate yours or the cat.
The bulldog ate mine.
The bulldog ate yours. That's right. So, science fiction is so derivative. And I just mentioned Three-Body Problem, which I think is one of the most original pieces of modern sci-fi. It's like a modernized version of War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Is what it is. But it is so drowned and steeped in scientific fact. It's kind of crazy. But we've talked about this before when Tracy was in with Edgar Rice Burroughs. Mm-hmm.
Burroughs.
Uh-huh. John Carter Mars is kind of the godfather of most modern science fiction, right, Art?
In a lot of ways. I mean, there's, you mentioned War of the Worlds, and obviously that's, an early Martian novel that Edgar Rice Burroughs says he never read, but there were influences.
Liar!
there's some tropes, Martian stuff, ancient civilization, whatever, that comes from there. But in 1911, Edgar Rice Burroughs comes up with the character of John Carter. The novel's not printed until 1917, A Princess of Mars, but it was released in a serialized form in magazines. And you've got again, it's not a science fiction novel as much as it is a science fantasy novel. There is some scientific stuff in there. We're not going to differentiate on that, I don't think.
I was going to say, define science fantasy.
Science fantasy doesn't have the true scientific stuff. I mean, it's like Star Wars is basically science fantasy because the technology really doesn't work. 2001 is more science fiction because they tried to stay within the confines of physics and technology that could exist. So I don't think most of us differentiate. I think most of us call science fiction Star Wars, Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon, whatever this is.
For me especially, I mean, I don't have... So, we talked about definitions before.
To me, the first... The Dying Earth by Jack Vance was science fantasy all the way. And that was my first introduction to science fantasy. But we're not going down that road. Right. So back to John Carter.
So John Carter is the character himself is a Civil War veteran. He's supposedly immortal. He's lived many lifetimes. He's a Civil War captain. He ends up dying on Earth and is astrally projected to Mars. And on Mars, because he's on a different planet, he has certain powers that he didn't have before. You know, he's stronger and also able to leap large distances.
So who would that have influenced?
That's right. So see if you can recognize the influences. He becomes a warrior fighting for a cause. There's several different types of races and species on Mars. There are the Red Martians, which is he falls in love with. I call it Deja Thoris. I've heard, I think Tracy says Deja Thoris, and I think the daughter or granddaughter's named that. So he falls in love with her, and it becomes this big epic thing. Again, very much like Star Wars, in that you've got a princess that has to be saved, and you've got this swashbuckling hero that's going to save her. You've got the Green Martians, who have four arms and are, you know, 10 feet tall or 13 feet tall, whatever they are. And they're called the Tharks. And he becomes friends with them and kind of unites several populations of Mars. But there's always, each chapter is basically a cliffhanger ending, you know, so it's like a movie serial. There's always danger happening. But the thing that's, and it takes place over several novels. Now, John Carter's not the hero of every novel, which was something Edgar Rice Burroughs did that was different from the Tarzan novels. He would explore other Martian heroes. But you've got, to me, you've got incredible world building because you've got all these different races and different animals and flora and fauna and stuff that play into the thing. You've got different mythology. You've got this whole afterlife idea. There's the River Iss and what happens to dead Martians. You've got the atmosphere generated by these atmosphere plants that plays into some of the storyline. You've got these bizarre characters. You've got different languages. Each race has their own language, or, you know, you have different Barsoomian words. Barsoom is the name of Mars that the Martians call Barsoom. You've got this technology in these floating ships. They have an anti-gravity system that allows them to float. And so I think what we mentioned when we were talking about this is, if you look at Empire Strikes Back, the whole Jabba the Hutt scene, his Princess Leia is dressed pretty much like Deja Thoris would be dressed. And the skiff that they're in is very much like something that would come from John Carter.
And Mars is kind of desert-like as well.
Mars is desert-like. So you've got, again, the things that they think were influenced by it, were Dune, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, Star Wars. You've also got Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon came about because Buck Rogers, who was also influenced by John Carter, was a successful comic strip. Alex Raymond wanted to do something to compete, or actually King Features tried to get him to create something that would compete with it. They wanted to get the rights to John Carter, but Edgar Rice Burroughs wouldn't give those up at the time. So they created Flash Gordon as, you know, a hero to compete with Buck Rogers.
And if
you
look at the universe.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to start singing in a minute. But that whole thing, again, you're taking somebody that has been removed from the world they know to a new alien planet. That happened with Buck Rogers. He's actually still on Earth, but he's 500 years later, so he's a man out of time. Yeah, that's right. You've got Flash Gordon, who, you know, actually goes to a different planet, but he travels through conventional means, a spaceship, as opposed to astral projection. But you've got all these people that are, you know, that, again, I think you mentioned the hero's journey, which is part of, and we see that in Star Wars. We see that in a lot of
art points to me.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, and didn't George Lucas want to make a Buck Rogers movie? and he couldn't secure the rights.
Is it either Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers?
I thought it was Buck Rogers.
I thought he wanted to do Flash Gordon.
Maybe it was Flash Gordon, but one of the two.
And the thing is, you see, if you watch the old Flash Gordon serial movies with Buster Crabbe, or the Buck Rogers movies with Buster Crabbe, the Tarzan movies with Buster Crabbe. Anyway, they've got a lot of the same kind of things. You've got that text that is going away from the screen, the slanted text that begins an episode. And so that's the opening crawl that he had on the beginning of Star Wars before it was New Hope is inspired by that, because each chapter would begin and they would kind of give you what happened previously through that crawl.
What we would call now the TLDR.
TLDR, too long, didn't read.
That's right.
Yeah. So a lot of the elements, the wipes that George Lucas, you know, did, those came from those movies. But the hero himself, a lot of the things with the hero is based on John Carter and other influences too. Obviously Lucas had a lot of Akira Kurosawa movies, and so a bunch of stuff went into that. And Edgar Rice Burroughs himself had influences. There's a book called Gulliver at Mars, and one guy says that he believes that Gulliver at Mars, which came out a few years before John Carter, that Edgar Rice Burroughs was basically ripping him off. And other scholars have said, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
And so what they said is all this stuff's out there. You know, there's nothing new under the sun, regardless of what planet that sun is shining on. So, but I think John Carter, like I said, the other influences I hadn't thought about too, that they said was Firefly was influenced, because you've got Malcolm Reynolds, who's a Civil War.
Yeah.
Basically.
He's a brown coat.
He was the wrong side, which is what John Carter was, or the losing side, which is what John Carter was on. So he's got that to deal with. And it's a space Western. And they say John Carter's a space Western.
That's right.
They're riding, you know, horse surrogates, you know, and all this. So there's a lot of that in there too. One thing that's interesting I've forgotten about is that all the races of Mars bear children through eggs. But John Carter ends up having children with Dejah Thoris. And so I'm like, okay, how does that work? I mean, it seems like there's something in the biology.
Again, space, fantasy.
That's right. So actually, no. But so there's some different things in there too. But Avatar, like I said, a lot of famous people. Carl Sagan, was a huge fan of John Carter. Ray Bradbury, Robert Heinlein, where Ronald Reagan was. A lot of these people that pointed to that and said that's what either, you know, awakened their interest in either science, in the case of Carl Sagan, or science fiction, in the case of Bradbury and Heinlein.
Sure.
So anyway.
Well, and you can draw a straight line to that, to Dune, because there are several things that Herbert took. He took the ecological thing with Arrakis, with the desert planet. But what Herbert then did, and what I think Dune is so influential, is you've got the hero's quest, you've got the young boy who becomes the Messiah, right? And spoiler alert, if you haven't, well, you've seen Dune Part 1, so you know that he
is the Kwisatz Haderach.
So, but it's that whole idea of this young malleable character comes into his own with the help of a older witch, in this case his mom. So Lucas took the idea of Luke Skywalker, Skywalker's lost his parents, raised by an uncle. Paul Atreides has lost his parents, and has lost his dad, being raised by his mom, who's a Bene Gesserit, which is a female Jedi for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. So George Lucas changes swaps the gender of the Jedi, because when Episode 4, when A New Hope comes out, it's kind of implied that the Jedi are these space wizards, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the whole idea of this desert planet. You've got the, what do they call them in Star Wars? We saw in A New Hope, we saw the sandworm skeleton that when 3PO and R2.
The dragons.
The Kralars or something like that. So there's elements of that, but you've got that hero's quest. And, of course, Luke is just, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
Yeah.
And Lucas stole so much. But Heinlein, but Dune is has been very influential in that hero's quest type mm-hmm. of thing. So, you know, George takes John Carter of Mars, makes him younger, brings in the hero's quest,
yeah.
and then, you know, here we are with a little Kurosawa mm-hmm. with Seven Samurai, and then you have A New Hope.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah. Now, when you, 1917 is when...
When the book came
when
out,
the book
when
came
Princess
out.
Of Mars came out, it had been serialized, like I said, as early as 1911 is when it started.
And Dune was published in 69, I uh-huh. believe. So, oh, sorry, I lied, 65.
Oh, okay.
So that was right around, when did Return of the King?
When did That was 30s, wasn't it?
No.
I thought...
No. I thought it was in the mid-50s. Yeah, 1955.
So when was The Hobbit? Was The Hobbit...
Hobbit was right after World War II.
Okay, yeah, because Bucky says, did you ever read The Hobbit? Yeah, I read it when it came out originally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's why I was thinking it was before. Yeah. It was right after World War II.
Yeah. Okay. So, but anyway, so there's the Dune piece. Mm-hmm. Now, I forgot how I said we're going to do. Jay, when did you've done a little bit of research on 1984?
Yeah, I had to read it in high school. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that actually plays into its influence. I don't remember the whole, like, necessarily the storyline, but I remember the words. I remember Big Brother, and I think it was like think newspeak, unperson, thought crime, those kinds of things, thought police. Those kinds of things have come into our vocabulary, especially Big Brother.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of, you know, big government or whatever, being a Big Brother and all that. So the influence from that, I mean, besides the book itself, was that every high schooler for generations had to read that or for years. I don't know if they still are.
I think now they just watch the news.
right. Yeah. But influential in that way, that so many people read it and became familiar with those terms and ideas. And then, of course, in my case, it was only 2 years later and it came true, you know. Uh-huh. But
it was published in 1949.
Okay.
And it really defined the dystopia genre.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas before, everything had been... You had some apocalyptic things happening, obviously, like War of the Worlds or whatever, but they were always outside influences, whereas 1984 showed a future that was of our own making.
It wasn't bright and shiny.
Yeah,
and
was it bright
and
shiny?
It wasn't George Jetson.
Yeah, and there wasn't the bacteria that fixed everything at the end of it. You know, I mean, 1984, I believe, ends still... You know, pretty sad.
Grimly, yeah. That's I just remember generally that.
But, yeah.
But yeah, I think I probably read it in 82 or 83. So,
yeah.
But at the time, I probably didn't even think, oh, this is next year, you know.
Yeah. I remember reading it. I'd read it once probably in high school and read it again in 1984 to actually read it, you know, the year. And again, it's a lot of it is so, you know, so pressing in what we, you know, ended up, so many things have happened, you know, since that. I mean, there was a, if you remember, there's a TV or monitor or whatever that the government would broadcast their instructions for, but they could also watch you through that, you know, and so
Alexa.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, all this stuff that we've got now that tracks us and monitors and does everything we want to do. Yeah.
It's really crazy how close we've come to that willingly, you know. And not to go down any conspiracy theorist, X-File-ish sort of things, but there's a lot that Orwell predicted that.
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting that George Orwell's name is now a adjective, Orwellian.
Orwellian, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, so, but you said there's some parallels, some influences on which.
Well, I looked through a list of, you know, influential sci-fi books, and one of them that came up, because I was trying to figure out which ones have I read, and the one that I had read was Jurassic Park, and I see that influence in a totally different way. I don't know how much other, like you mentioned, all the genres and people that John Carter influenced. I'm not sure how much Jurassic Park influenced other writers, but look at what it generated, you know, influential in the sense of, you know, the movie, what, six movies now or seven movies that have come out of it. And I think it was a year or two back, one of my Geeks of the Week was this whole recreation of the woolly mammoth.
Yeah, uh-huh.
which eerily sounds like the same thing they did in Jurassic Park. So I don't know that we're going to see that specifically, but, you know, they're actually trying.
But, I mean, even if you take the dinosaur part of it, the genetic manipulation, mm-hmm. the way that they're looking to manipulate the DNA structure of, you know, of living uh-huh. things, existing things, you know, kind of, I think, plays back to that, the warning that Jurassic Park gave us in, uh-huh. in kind of the same way that Godzilla and all those movies was basically a statement on nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park takes this, gives us a fun adventure romp.
Mm-hmm. Well, fun for some.
Yeah. Fun for some. Not the guy that was on the toilet.
But, hello, Mr. Newman.
That's right. Yeah. He does not make it. He's not very well at all. No. But anyway, it's this idea of scientists playing God. You know, mm-hmm. so what can we learn from that? What is
and
our warning?
Parallel to that is, you know, you create something that should be amazing and positive and is turned into something very negative in the wrong hands. Sorry. Again, in the wrong hands, it can be dangerous.
This dystopian podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did either of you read Jurassic Park when it came out?
I probably didn't read it immediately, but I read the book.
Yeah.
I was a huge Michael Crichton fan.
I love Michael Crichton.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, pretty much everything he's there was Sphere was kind of and then what was the one where they go back in time? I can't remember.
Yeah.
I didn't care that much uh-huh. for that. But,
I can't remember the name of that either. Time something, I'm sure, but I can't remember. And then there's the one that's about the cannibals where they go, it's like a period piece. It's in the 1800s. I can't remember what it is. Or pirates or something like that. They made a movie with Anthony Banderas about it. But again,
Eaters of the Dead.
Yeah, yeah. What I liked about it was what I liked about Michael Crichton is he could approach so many different things, mm-hmm. you know. And you know, so if you think he's just writing, you know, like books like Jurassic Park, then something like
the guy had a friggin' MD.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. We should do a show. We should shut up right now. We should do a Michael Crichton show.
Okay, we'll shut up right now.
Okay, shut up right now.
I think that'd be because, like I said, this just such a wide ranging.
Well, I mean, you know, he wrote the original screenplay for Westworld.
Yeah.
So
and Andromeda Strain's one of my favorite books of his and
Timeline.
Timeline. That's Timeline. It. Yeah.
So
I like that one actually.
Yeah.
But we'll save that for.
For the Michael. I can't believe we haven't done a Michael Crichton show yet. So maybe that's next week. So the other novel I wanted to bring up was Starship Troopers by Robert Heinlein. Mm-hmm. And you call him Heinlein. I call him Heinlein.
You're probably right.
I don't know that I'm right. But so Starship Troopers was written. I had it up here. What was it? Early 50s. That's a huge Wikipedia entry. November of 1959, and Art, I know have you read?
Yeah, I've read it. Yeah.
You read it?
May have read it more than once, but I know I've read it at least once.
Well, if you've seen the movie, you have it. You have no.
Well, that's what I when I was reading this list, they said the article I read said that. See, I did prepare. The article I read said that
someone's podcast,
if you are expecting the campy sort of fun humor of the movie in the book, you were going to be very disappointed.
Very, very disappointed.
Yeah, so. And if you were expecting the book, you were going to be disappointed in the movie.
Oh, gosh. I was so disappointed in the movie. Paul Verhoeven. I think that was right off he had finished Showgirls.
Is that what he did? Showgirls first?
I think he did Showgirls first. Then, or maybe he did Starship Troopers and Showgirls. It's just absolutely horrible. But, you know, the thing about... So the themes in Starship Troopers are... It's a futuristic society where only veterans could hold public office mm-hmm. or own land. So you had the only way you had a right to vote is if you served in armed forces. But so many things that Starship Troopers introduced the idea of powered armor, mm-hmm. which is not covered in the movie at all. Mm-hmm. There is a alien that attacks Earth. You have the phrase bug hunt. Comes up.
Yeah. Aliens, the James Cameron thing. James Cameron. It felt much more Starship Troopers than the actual movie did.
It was very
Starship. Drop ships that brought them down. It was just, So
you had, in Starship Troopers was basically you have this kid who goes into the service mm-hmm. and he ends up as infantry, and his two buddies do fairly high things. They test on aptitude tests much higher than he does, and so he ends up in the infantry, ends up going to the home world of the aliens that attack, and is not distinguished in any particular way. This book is a is from a point of view of a basically every guy type of character who experiences war. Now, some of the reactions to it has been it glorifies war too much. It's more, it's too much, you know, yay, military-industrial complex. But the things you get from Starship Troopers that influenced sci-fi is the idea of powered armor, which influenced Mobile Suit Gundam, which is the anime and manga that created the big giant robot.
Right.
So without Starship Troopers, you probably do not have Transformers or Power Rangers or any of that line.
Or Iron Man. I mean, you think or about Iron it, Man. I mean, this came out in 59. Iron Man's not coming out till 64.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very, very influential. So, and like you said, James Cameron based it a lot of aliens, the way the Marines interacted, the whole nine yards on the drop ships. There were several other things that.
But yeah, I mean, you've got, like you said, and the thing of it is, you never have this moment where Rico suddenly becomes like greater than just who he is.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was always like that.
Yeah. So he wasn't a hero. I mean, he was, like I said, he was an everyday man. So.
Also, he was from Brazil. Where was he? He was from South America somewhere.
Yeah. I think it was Brazil.
Which I always thought was interesting, you know, when you have so many heroes and stories set in the United States, it automatically gave you a global feel for that thing to have their hero, you know, and it was just, there wasn't anything made of it. That's just where he was from. So it was, I thought that was, it gave you a global feel as opposed to everything that's so America centric.
Yeah. Orson Scott Card with Ender's Game. There's some influence of Starship Troopers there. Basically, you know, I'm quoting from an article. Franchises that employed this technology, talking about the suits, are Iron Man, Exo Squad, Halo, District 9, Elysium, Edge of Tomorrow.
And I think you've got, I mean, with this, we've got kind of the three different, I know there's more than this, I'm oversimplifying, but your science fiction, you break down to Hero's Quest kind of stuff.
Yep.
You know, usually some wise older figure, you know, advising some hero, whatever. So you've got that, and that's coming from John Carter, and that you can trace that through Flash Gordon, Star Wars, that stuff. You've got the dystopian future, which, gosh, we see a lot of now.
Yeah.
Which basically comes from 1984.
Hunger Games.
You know, all this stuff where you've got
Last of Us. Yeah.
What's the one? Children of Men.
Oh, Children of Men. Oh,
brilliant. And a lot of times, like I said, they take the idea and they come up with something that's every bit as masterful as what this source material was, if not more so. And then you've got this military type science fiction.
Your hard science fiction, your classic military space soldier.
The thing that's not in there probably, and even, I don't know, maybe you could say Star Trek comes from that because it's still military. It's just not the soldier kind of stuff. I mean, it's an explorer kind of thing. So maybe Star Trek or something along that lines, you know, that may be more of a movie kind of thing.
Well, to me, Star Trek is almost the anti-Starship Troopers.
Yeah, because you've got a military thing, but it's not militaristic.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's basically military only in the structure of the command of the ship,
because
but as exploration and science is what they, you know, they end up, you know, having, because they're on the frontier, the final frontier, if you will.
The space aquatic with Jean-Luc Picard. So, yeah.
But so. I think you can kind of break it down to, that's at least a lot of the science fiction that we see.
Yeah. You know, Jay, I think you would enjoy reading Starship Troopers. It's a little dated, but it's a great read. It's a couple hundred pages.
Oh, so. Well, I can handle that.
Yeah. You could probably knock that out in a couple of days. So.
More homework. The list more homework for you, Jay.
More homework. Yeah, well, I like to read. On this list, I was surprised to see Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde listed as an influential book, and they mentioned specifically the Hulk. You know, would there be Hulk, Incredible Hulk, if there was no Jekyll and Hyde? Yeah. And, you know.
And part of what I saw looking at the Batman stuff is Two-Face.
Yeah.
And in fact, the first scene of the splash page of the comic story that Two-Face appears in, he's reading Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So, I mean, they made no bones about what they did. But, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, because there's obviously a Frankenstein influence in the Hulk, but this dichotomy, these two people.
Yeah. Well, and the Frankenstein was like the number one book listed. I maybe the oldest.
Yeah, Shelley, the Mary Shelley, the greatest campfire story ever told. Yeah, so, well, and back to 1984, Philip K. Dick borrowed so many of Orwell's conceits and just ideas. I mean, Minority Report, which is based upon a Philip K. Dick novel, about the whole predictive crime, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that end up in what Philip K. Dick did. Mm-hmm. So, but what else is on your list as we get ready to wrap
up? That was the list, but there was the list, Station 11, and that, you know, recently we watched that, right?
Yeah.
That was, I didn't know that was a book.
It's a graphic novel, I think, isn't it?
No, it's a book.
Actually a book.
Okay. Book. It's a really...
Oh, no. There's a graphic novel in the story.
That's right. Yeah,
that's right.
The book is great. I think I like the book better than the series.
I've heard people say... People liked the series, but most people that I know that have read it have said they actually preferred the book, which is, you know, not
which
atypical.
Which takes place in Toronto instead of Chicago.
Oh, so, okay.
Anyway. I mean, it mentions the three-body problem here.
Oh, yeah. Such a good book.
Seemed like I saw a couple of others, but that was pretty much it. I mean, those as far as the ones I recognize, there's a ton here that y'all may see. You mentioned Children of Men, right?
P.D. James, Children of Men. Yeah, it's great. Hey, Jay.
Anyway.
Talking to you, Mike.
Oh, the mic. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I don't get much podcasting experience.
Not here anyway.
Yeah, not here at all. So
do they have a different mic for
they probably
you
have
there?
A fancy headset.
Yeah, that's
probably
right.
What they did. No, we don't want to talk
about it. You stand up like you're doing sports and stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
With a green screen behind me. Yep.
Did you have a green screen behind you?
No.
Okay.
I want to hear more about the setup for the video.
Okay.
No, I don't either. So, but
not on here.
No, not at all. Not ever. Brings up too many bad memories. So, Princess of Mars, highly recommend that you read. Starship
Troopers. Yeah, there's a whole series. I'd read the whole series, but definitely Princess of Mars.
Princess of Mars, Starship Trooper by Heinlein. 1984 by George Orwell. And those are all relatively easy to get into. They're a couple hundred pages.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Dune is thicker. Dune's 400 to 500 pages, and it's a lot of world building. But
a lot of these that came from these are much larger novels.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever they inspired become much larger pieces.
Yeah. So, all right, that does it for us this week. Thanks for joining us. Tune in next week. Will Robbie upload the right podcast? Will Jay even be with us anymore? Stay tuned. You'll find out.